All right. Jeremy Roizen, are you okay with being recorded on a podcast?
Yes.
Well, there goes that liability.
This is I Took a Hike. I'm your host, Darren Mass, founder of Business Therapy Group and part-time wilderness philosopher. Here we step out of the boardrooms and home offices and into the great outdoors, where the hustle of entrepreneurship meets the rustle of nature. In this episode, we hear the sounds of a brisk morning trek with Jeremy Roizen, a trailblazing entrepreneur and the owner of a precious metals recycling company. Our topic sparked the inspiration of hustle and drive, never settling for comfortability, rising to the top of your industry, and the challenges of midlife reflections. This hike was filled with the sights, sounds, and autumn scents in the Northeast. There were undoubtedly some obstacles to overcome when I took a hike with Jeremy Roizen. This episode is sponsored by DeFi Supplements. Are you feeling stuck in a rut? Do you need more energy for the trail? Stuck behind the screen all day and lacking focus? Well, you need to recalibrate, my friend, and get your energy back for the summit. Calibrate is a premium brain health supplement doctor formulated to help with energy, focus, mood, and longevity. Visit defyyourmind.com and use code HIKE for 20% off, and you will defy your expectations.
So, welcome to Watchung Reservation.
Thank you.
We're going to have fun. It's a nice cool day, autumn.
Yes.
Beautiful leaves. Breathe that awesome air. Listen to the sounds. It did rain a lot, so we are going to be experiencing probably some heavier streams than normal. I promise if you get carried away, I'll try to save you.
Heavier what?
Streams.
What's that?
Like a river?
Oh, streams. Yes. I thought you said screams.
Like what? Well, what kind of screams? How often do you hike?
Never. This is my first hike ever.
Ever?
Ever.
This is great. Okay. Fun. You're going to experience something that you've never seen before.
You do know that I don't like the wilderness or nature. I'm a city boy, and when I moved to Jersey, I asked if I can pave my whole front yard, and they laughed at me.
So, Jeremy, who are you, and why do we care about you?
I am a first-generation American. My family came from Ukraine. In the 70s, they were part of like the first wave of immigrants to come during that time. My mom and dad met in Brooklyn, Brighton Beach, got married, had myself, my sister. My dad was in a gold mining business in New York for 30 years. My mother has a ballet school in Brooklyn for 30 years. She still has one.
Wow. Did she ever try to teach you ballet?
Yeah, so she actually forced me to do ballet till I was about 10.
All right, so forced.
Yes.
So this is not your thing.
No.
Okay.
I'm not a...
You're not a twinkle toes.
I don't like dancing.
You don't like dancing. Okay.
So when I was around 12, I went to military school. And I was in military school for junior high school.
Elective, or were you just that kid that needed to be forced into a different path?
Let's just say I didn't last very long in schools when I was a kid.
Okay.
And I needed a little more discipline, and I didn't listen to authority. I wouldn't say I was disrespectful. I just was very kind of carefree.
So did you look at military school as if it was a punishment?
It was. I mean, you know, you're essentially put in what could be considered prison for kids, right? You don't have any free time. You live on a schedule. You can't go home. You go from being a child to being a person with no identity or say in what you can do in your own life.
So did you find that, you know, you harbored the fact that there was a punishment and maybe your parents didn't love you?
No. I understood why I was there. But, you know, it doesn't mean that I wanted to be there.
Got it. But you got through it.
I did, yeah.
Did you find any good aspects at all of being in military school, either discipline or educational value?
You know, the discipline of the military teaches people how to structure themselves, and it also helped me in business where, you know, you can structure your business with the same like mindsets of the military. You know, everything follows a chain of command. People don't interfere in that chain of command. That's why I never micromanage my managers or partners, because I feel like if you're in business with somebody, you need to trust them.
So let's fast forward a little bit professionally. So what do you do?
So my dad was in the gold buying business.
Mm-hmm.
What about the easy route?
Oh, I didn't say this was an easy hike. I said it was a moderate hike. Come on.
Not a good day for asthma today.
Oh, FYI. You also have asthma.
Developed asthma from my business.
From your business?
Yeah.
Okay, then I feel like we're going to hear this story.
Yeah. I was in college at the time, and I had a small mortgage company in Brooklyn. It wasn't really doing too well because during that time, this was when everybody was doing the... Talking and walking for me right now is an NG.
Oh, that's the fun of this whole experience.
There was a big mortgage boom in late 90s, early 2000s, because of the, the deregulation of banks at the time.
Yeah.
Which led to the financial crisis. But during that time, there was a lot of, you know, shady things going on in the mortgage industry. I was not willing to participate in that.
Yeah, such as underwriting mortgages for people who had extremely low credit worthiness or inability to even afford the home.
And you knew in conversation that they couldn't afford the stuff, so a lot of brokers would write them. I wouldn't. So my business wasn't doing too well because of that.
Well, that's also part of the reason for 2008's crisis.
Right. And eventually, my dad told me that there's precious metals in catalytic converters. Now, when people hear catalytic converters today, they're like, you're a crook, you steal, because they automatically associate that business with criminality because of all the news and things like that.
But yeah, I hear about the catalytic converters being stolen from cars all the time.
Right.
Right. It's rampant in our towns and our cities these days.
Yeah. Well, that's due to the rise in precious metals because of demand for more catalyst in converters. They need more catalytic converters in the world because they were pumping out so many cars that there was a big deficit.
So there's precious metal. What type of metals?
Platinum, palladium, and rhodium.
Oh, very expensive precious metals. Well, and those are in catalytic converters. What's the purpose of having the metals in there?
So it reduces the CO2.
The metals do?
Yes. So you need all three metals to create this chemical reaction that reduces CO2. And catalytic converters are used in all industries that produce carbon. Okay. So in cars, they're a smaller version of what an oil refinery would use or anything. So catalytic converters are used in every aspect of life. And for consumers, it's in cars.
Okay, so these are only in combustion cars. Electric cars do not have catalytic
converters. No, but you know, what people fail to realize is that, you know, an average car produces maybe 5 metric tons of carbon a year.
Okay, that's a lot. That's a lot for a single car.
Yeah, but mining for these rare earth metals has a larger impact on the world than every car.
Yeah.
I mean, look, it's one of those things where, you know, I don't like nature, but I'd like to preserve it.
These are the kind of prerequisites for I took a hike.
Yeah.
Kind of have to like nature a little bit. So how much metal is in a catalytic converter? Meaning like, can I take my catalytic converter, crack it open and see a bar of metal in there?
It's very small amounts and it's flaked on. Okay. So it's a volume business.
So if someone busted it open, you wouldn't see it?
No.
Okay.
No, and the misconception also is that our industry is full of criminals and, you know, and mafia. But the truth is the business is run by mostly corporations and family people. Mm-hmm. And you have some bad actors that have done some bad things over the years. But
Bad actors in every single
industry.
Sure. No matter what, right?
It's the same like in, you know, the medical industry where doctors prescribe things.
Yeah. or get kickbacks.
You know, or get kickbacks.
Politicians, you know, every single industry, there's always a bad human.
Right.
So you've built this company based on precious metals.
So I started, how I started in the converter business was, my dad told me the idea. I got in my car at the end of when I was in school. While I had my mortgage company, I was in school full time.
Okay.
And I got in my car, drove around repair shops on a Friday, dumpster dived into some repair shops dumpsters.
Okay.
Picked out these catalytic converters.
Seriously, you were dumpster diving to pick out catalytic converters?
Yeah, because back then people would throw them out.
Oh, they didn't know what was in it.
They didn't care. They were not as valuable as they are today.
Got
it. You have to keep in mind that the value today was not the value yesterday.
Because the price of metals has increased over time.
Right.
Okay.
When I started, platinum was maybe 800 an ounce. Palladium was probably 200 an ounce.
And what is it today?
900, 1300. And rhodium was also maybe a couple of $100 an ounce. At the peak, it's hit 30,000 an ounce.
Jeez.
So I dumpster dive, and I realized that there at the end of school, I just dumpster dive and made like a grand selling it back to one of my competitors. And I was like, holy shit, there's a business here. So I got a pickup truck, drove around, started picking up more material. And I was just guessing on how to buy. Some places would give it for free. Some people would make me pay. I'd lose. I'd make. But ultimately, I started cataloging everything that I was buying.
So you had that natural business brain. You had the vision. And you saw a huge opportunity.
You know, I feel like I saw a business, but it wasn't like this light that went off.
Okay.
It was more like I just made a grand. Let's see if I can make two. Let's see if I can make three. And right, and just keep pushing.
Okay.
Right, so it wasn't really like I didn't understand what I was onto because I had no experience. Right, today, if I saw that, I'd be like, oh shit, I have a business. Back then, it was more about like, how much more can I make?
Well, so that's what it takes to be a real hustler and to really grow a business, is you just have to do it, right? You get through it, and all of a sudden, you start recognizing patterns over time.
Right.
You start recognizing that, oh, this is why I did that, and that's why I became so successful. All right, so let's cross this stream. Again, if you fall in, I will definitely save you.
Okay.
Wow, all good. You made that look really easy.
I mean...
That was an easy path. All right, so here we are.
Hey, listener. Thanks for hiking along with us. Discover more episodes at itookahike.com or to recommend an adventurous guest, apply to be a sponsor, or to simply drop us a line.
Look, about 3 months in, I'm at a Chinese store, local Chinese restaurant. My friend's parent walks in, sees me all dirty after a day's work, and is like, Jeremy, everything's okay?
You
good? I'm like, yeah, everything is great. And she's like, there were a couple, and the wife says to me, I've never seen you this dirty. I'm like, well, I'm working. She's like, okay, yeah, great. And I knew that they were judging me based on my appearance of not being in my usual suit and tie and, you know, conforming to what they...
You weren't prim and proper anymore.
Right. What they deem as successful. Meanwhile, that day, I probably made like $2,500-$3,000 just picking through, you know, scrap.
Not a bad day's work.
Yeah, so funny thing about that story is about a year, maybe less than a year later, their son came to work for me.
It's amazing how full circle life can be.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, you know, but we partnered with a company called BASF, which is a...
huge mega brand.
Right.
Huge. Publicly billions, traded. Multi-billions.
Right.
Yeah.
In chemicals, pharmaceuticals, weapons, probably everything. It's a 100-year-old German company.
Yep. It's Monster Corporation.
They weren't the first partner I had.
Okay.
I started with a company called Tecumet. Mm-hmm. Then I switched to another company 10 years later called Sibanye Stillwater, which is another publicly traded company, mining company in South Africa.
Okay.
When the pandemic hit, I switched to BASF.
Okay. So you work with these big companies. I'm sure you negotiated great rates with them.
Yeah, you negotiate terms. They usually give you 6 to 12 month terms. Yeah. And then you just got to deliver.
And you've got these big contracts. So how much by weight? What's the weight? What's the volume of business you're doing?
I mean, at our peak, we were doing about 60,000 pounds of material a month.
That's a lot.
It's a lot.
What do you package it up? You split
it? So what happens, we buy the cans whole, we break it down, we put it in super sacks, and then we ship it in super sacks.
That's awesome. To Germany?
No, they have locations in the U.S. Okay. So they're scattered all over the U.S. For security, I won't say where they're located, but
I appreciate
which location we ship to.
Yeah.
But essentially, there's points in the U.S. that you ship to, and they refine the material here.
Okay, so you have just the raw material, so they pay you per pound?
No, so we refine it, actually.
You refine it as well?
So they refine it for us. That's their purpose. Okay. They take a couple of percent for it, and then we can choose to get the metal back or sell it to the OEMs, the car manufacturers. Okay. So the mining business is one aspect of these metals getting back into the market, but the recycling business actually has the biggest impact and the least impact on the environment. So all these big corporations that are in the business of providing car manufacturers with catalyst have to buy a certain amount from recycling.
Got it. Because, in order to maintain their certification or just the goodwill
to,
of the
to show that they're actually involved in buying from recycling.
Kind of have to put their money where their mouth is.
Right.
In that sense. Okay, cool. So we've got the business here. We've got the why, the purpose. You're doing very well, I assume, right? You're selling 60,000 pounds of material to a mega company. This is real quality material. So you've got a solid business here. How long did it take to get to that level?
20 years.
20 years. So you went from pickup trucks and dumpster diving, but at what point during that 20-year period did it turn into a real business?
Probably about 2 years in.
2 years in. That's pretty quick.
Yeah.
Pretty quick. And you were able to hire staff, get an office, do the things that a business would need.
I mean, I hired staff, got an office, warehouse, probably about 8 months in, and I was still in school at the time.
Okay. So, you are clearly a little winded. Is that because of the business?
So, because when I started in the business, I had nobody to really teach me anything. Mm-hmm. I would cut the material myself and not wear PPE.
I did Google it and watch a YouTube video on catalytic converter recycling. The big machine, basically looks like a guillotine with a point.
Correct.
Slices it in half. There's powder, lots of powder in it.
And it's flying all over the place.
So you didn't think to ever wear a mask?
I was 22 years old.
There you go. That's all you had to say.
I was 22 years old.
Yep.
I had no health issues. I was on top of the world, like every 22-year-old is.
Mm-hmm.
Not financially or physically. I was just mentally on top of the world.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would cut these catalysts open and inhale all this material. Eventually, it scars your lungs.
I imagine because it's like a fine particulate. It's cutting
very
it
fine
up.
Particles.
Like a concrete almost.
Right.
Okay. And it solidifies.
And so, about 2 years into the business, I developed asthma from it.
Okay. And when I imagine you saw a doctor. Did the doctor tell you cut it out?
Doctor said cut it out. I said... You don't know what you're talking about. Find another doctor. Found another doctor.
Notice a trend from when you were young with school and authority. Okay.
You know, until you finally realize and associate when you feel sick and don't. So, you know, today my guys wear respirators and...
Yeah, you care about their health.
Right. You know, it's if I catch anybody without a respirator, they're let go immediately.
Well, it reminds me of Paul O'Neill. It's one of the best... business stories that I've ever heard. And when I went to business school, they taught about it. Paul O'Neill became the CEO of Alcoa, the aluminum corporation of America in the 80s. And at the time, the stock was not doing too great, and that's why they brought Paul in. And Paul's first press conference, where the investment community is just sitting there waiting on bated breath for how he's going to pump shareholder value, the only thing he wanted to talk about was not P&Ls, not revenue, not new products, new design, none of that. All he wanted to talk about was safety.
Right.
He only cared about worker safety. And then his entire conversation was around, we have too many accidents. We have too many mistakes. We have too many people dying, right? They're falling into the furnaces. They're dying of heat exhaustion, right? It was the most dangerous business to be in. So obviously what happened next, the investment community hated that. The stock tanked. And, well, Paul did his thing.
Right.
He then made sure that safety, worker safety, was the number one priority. If there was an incident, it was reported. He bought everyone new safety gear. There was new safety trainings. Well, in a matter of only a few years, it became one of the most valuable companies ever. And the reason why, his message was more than just safety. Let's be honest, I'm sure he truly did care about people and their safety, but he knew if the CEO cares about your life and your safety, then you are going to want to work more efficiently, better, and happier, knowing that people actually care about you.
Right.
And at work. And they had the worst safety record prior to Paul. After, I believe, have to check this as well, it's hard to fact check while you're on the trail, but I believe they only had one or two safety incidents during his entire tenure.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and he was an amazing CEO, and it's an amazing story to tell.
This episode is proudly brought to you by Brand Built, a dynamic social media networking community designed to elevate your success. Feeling stuck in a brand loop? Your brand matters more than ever before, and falling behind is not an option. Join our dynamic community for expert social media guidance, valuable lessons, education, weekly spotlights, monthly speakers, and a robust brand-building network. Explore more at mybrandbuilt.com and join me in the chat for a thriving journey to success.
This is where we can start chatting about learning lessons and, you know, teachable moments. You are clearly very smart, wise. You understand and you can foresee that your business is going to be challenged. So what steps are you taking to either take this current business, future-proof it, diversify it, or in essence, wind it down?
Yeah, so I think any business, the smart business owners will always look forward and try to predict the future. You might not always be right, but you have to, in one way or another, try to predict what's happening 6 to 12 months forward.
That's right.
In our case, I'm trying to predict, you know, 3-4 years forward. Or I started doing that several years ago.
Give me a for instance of what you're doing.
Right now, we're in the process of trying to acquire other junkyards, scrapyards, so we can diversify out of just doing catalytic converters.
Okay, so one key approach is to diversify product set.
If you can, not every industry you can diversify.
Well, you can go off into different lines of business.
Right.
But from at least my own experience in failing, if you are going to diversify, then you have to be all in it. You have to be ready to diversify. You have to be ready and you have to have milestones when you do pivot. And you have to be willing to invest in that like you invested in your first business. Otherwise, side business fails. Right?
Right.
The pivot will always fail.
Sure. I think that business owners need to figure out how to pivot. And, you know, I know everyone uses the term entrepreneur today, and it's a very loose term.
It's incredibly loose of a term.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody...
In fact, the right term is what Mark Cuban said. It's wantrepreneur.
Because it's
wantrepreneur.
Wantrepreneur.
There's so many people that have great ideas and visions, but they don't have the ability to pivot from being that idea, that visionary, that wantrepreneur,
right,
into being a business owner.
Right.
And there are differences, major differences between an entrepreneur and a business owner.
Agreed.
As big as of a difference as a business owner and a CEO.
Right.
And they're not used interchangeably.
Right. Like if you own a deli, you're a business owner.
Yeah, small business owner.
Right. If you're an entrepreneur, I think you're creating things that are changing society. Like I consider myself a business owner, not an entrepreneur, even though I've been involved in, you know, various businesses in my life. That doesn't make me an entrepreneur.
So I would consider you an entrepreneur based on the fact that you had a mortgage business. And it's, to me, the entrepreneur is the business thinking, the mentality you have. You saw a hole and a void and you filled it.
Right.
You had that vision. Now you turned into a business owner with this current company.
That's
because
fair.
Now you're running a physical business.
Right.
But you had mentioned before that you always see ideas, whether it was trading cards growing up or a mortgage business, that's entrepreneurial, right? You're constantly looking for the next, latest, greatest. Right. Even now, when you said with the scrapyards, that's an entrepreneurial mindset.
Right.
But you still own a business, and that's your core focus. Now, when you sell this business, then we'll have another conversation.
I mean, you know, I don't know if I'll ever sell it. Okay. I have two sons. So, you know, I don't know what the future holds for them, but maybe it'll be something they'll want to go into. Not necessarily I want them to go into it.
That was my next question.
But, you know, if they like it and enjoy it, then why not?
So you do know the risk of having a generational business, correct?
Well, most of the time they don't live up to the standards and it'll go out of business anyway.
That's exactly right, right? The statistic is pretty high,
right?
And that's because the child, the second generation, was born without the same hunger in their belly.
Sure.
Because the father took care of them, right? Now, from what I'm hearing of you and I know of you, I have a feeling you're probably not raising your kids to be spoiled.
I am.
You are?
Yeah.
All right, I'm surprised.
Look, it's...
I like being wrong.
You know, I'm of the... They're still young. They'll have their time to grind. I let them understand the concept of money. But, you know, I do give them majority of what they want.
Okay.
But they're good kids, so they deserve it.
Good.
You know, they don't throw tantrums. They don't cry and moan about things.
Having three children. I'm calling bullshit. Your kids don't throw tantrums?
Yeah, no, my kids don't throw tantrums.
Around you or in general?
In general.
Oh. You just became the most envied or loathed guest.
I don't, look, I think it has a lot to do with genetics, maybe. my wife and I are both very calm people.
Okay, I gather.
And, you know, because of that, maybe something kind of is innate in them to not throw tantrums.
So that would explain why my kids are sometimes nuts. My wife and I are not calm.
Well,
we're very energetic people. We're achievers in that sense.
Yeah, so. I mean, look, it's there's nothing wrong with throwing tantrums or showing emotion. Maybe it's better in a way because you release that energy.
That's right.
You know, for my kids, they hold it in and disperse it differently, their frustration, but maybe that's going to be a downside for them in life. I don't know.
Well, time will tell. But one thing I do know is you never tell someone else how to parent because you're wrong as well. So, all right, let's get back to this business. You've done a pivot.
Let's get back to the business.
Do you see success with this pivot currently, or is it still a work in progress?
Nobody knows, right? It's just another, hustle, right? You were pivoting because I know the scrap industry is a good industry,
mm-hmm.
but whether or not I'll succeed, that time will tell.
Okay.
Right? It's all based on my execution. There's no guarantee for me based on prior history.
Well, right? There's no guarantees with anything in life.
Right.
Right? Except for the fact that you are your own best investment.
Right.
Right? Your time, your effort, your hustle makes you the best investment you'll ever have.
Right.
Right, and if you're not willing to constantly reinvest and re-up yourself, then you kind of want yourself to fail.
Well, it kind of goes with the saying, scared money doesn't make money.
Scared money does not make money. Right. Yes, that
so
is absolutely true.
You have to invest and you have to take risk. If you don't take risk, then you'll never get anywhere. You know, it's, and I think there's different risk at different points in life, right? So if you're 20 years old, you can take more risk. And then if you're 30, you probably take less risk because you have family, you have people that depend on you, right? And then when you're 40, you'll probably take even less risk. But then if you're somebody like Elon or somebody else, you'll keep taking risks. And I envy people like that. And I probably try to live my life a little closer to that mentality that I'll always take risk.
Can I ask,
yeah.
Do you truly believe that electric is not the best thing for the planet? Or is it because you run a business currently that requires electric to be suppressed?
So I actually drive electric cars. Okay. Ironically, right? So I'm like, I actually don't.
You don't practice what you preach.
Well, I do.
No, yeah.
Because I'm not against progress and change, and I'll try anything. And if I really do believe that electric is better for the planet, I would fully adopt to it. And even if it destroys my business and industry, it's okay. Progress is part of life, and change is part of life. And if you stand in the way of progress and change, you get left behind. So me driving an electric car, being in a petrol industry, is not because I hate electric, or I actually like electric, but I do think that it's worse for the world. You actually can't recycle lithium batteries. You can turn them into other things, but you have to continue mining the earth for the rare earth metals.
So that is something that is a scary reality of all of this, is that we're all being sold that electric is better for the environment, right? The mentality, and this is, I don't know if this is just an American mentality or naivete or the fact that the average person's IQ isn't enabling them to think beyond, but we believe as a whole that, oh, if I just plug it into my wall, it's better for the environment, right? There's nothing coming out of an exhaust pipe.
It's because you don't see it.
Exactly. We don't see it, so we don't know what it really takes to produce that kilowatt.
Right.
The largest fuel source for this country still
is
fossil fuel.
Right.
It's coal.
Right.
Right? Natural gas has to be fracked.
Right.
You know, hydropower is great, but we don't have big dams, except if you're up, let's say, in Rochester, New York, or in Buffalo or Niagara.
Right.
Right? So we're still burning something to make that kilowatt.
Right. Plus mining for lithium and the other rare earth metals that go into lithium are detrimental to our planet.
So is this a complete farce? Are we being sold a bill of goods?
We are, essentially. You know, until we find a way to effectively bring these rare earth metals back into their rare form and recycle them and put them into new cars, we will essentially destroy this planet mining for these materials.
So we're exacerbating the problem by essentially swatting at a fly with a sledgehammer.
Yeah.
Which is what we do very well in this country.
Right. And then you can ask the question again, so why are you driving electric?
Yeah.
I drive it because it's fast, it's quiet, and I like the comfort of plugging in at home.
So
I hate going to the gas station.
So there you go. So that makes more sense, the convenience. Would you like to sit next to the pergola?
Sure.
We can have a seat in a romantic pergola.
Right.
So that unfolds the reality, right? And I don't buy it when people say they're purely driving an electric car for the environment, because either they are uneducated, unintelligent, or unaware.
I mean, they're essentially listening to what they're being told, right?
Which falls under the uneducated, unintelligent, and unaware. It falls into the three categories. Now,
this looks like a sacrificing throne.
Well, Jeremy.
Like an old Mayan,
Mayan would require a lot more age here. In fact, I don't think that this country was around during that.
Obviously.
But
just giving the analogy.
So I do appreciate the fact that you say your reality. The reality is you're driving an electric car because of the convenience
factor.
And that makes sense to me.
Yeah, for a daily driver not hearing an engine and plugging in when you come home, not having to go to a gas station, is extremely convenient.
And being able to charge on your time. So I appreciate that. I just wish people would completely stop saying, oh, it's better for the environment. Because when I hear people say it's better for the environment, I know I can't have an intelligent conversation with you. So I immediately know that you're not going to be able to have the middle conversation. You're going to pick one side.
Right.
You have gone, how many miles do you think you went?
I can tell you.
Oh, that's cheating. 1.8.
I got 1.9.
Well, that's because you got double steps. A little shorter than me, so your legs have to move more.
That's messed up. So not nice. I only look shorter. You're standing higher, and you're wearing heels, so.
I am, no. Look, when we have some debris from some ferns that want to propagate, and you have a nettle.
Excuse me.
Isn't that cool how that works?
Oh. Yeah.
Shall we?
Continue on? Yes.
I want to hear about your business lessons. Inspirations. What have you learned? So let's talk about...
You know, earlier we talked about trust, right?
Yes.
So trust comes and goes in life, right? And the biggest people that can betray you is probably family, and then goes friends, and then business partners and whatnot.
Well, the people that can hurt you the most are the ones that are closest to you.
Yeah.
Longest standing relationships.
So in our industry, a lot of it is on trust, right? So you ship material to a refiner. You hope that the refiner will pay you. But the refiner also pays you on delivery in advance of the material and hopes that what you're saying is in there is actually in there before it takes them, you know, 3-4 months to process the material and get a result on it. So there's a lot of trust involved, right? And because of that trust, when we buy from people, we also have to trust the people we buy from. And, you know, we've advanced people and been burned and things like that, right? And, you know, it's just the nature of business where you figure out if you want to take these type of risks or not. And it's probably a defining moment for people in business if they take those risks.
Yeah.
Because it's easier not to take those risks. It's easier to hold on to your money and, you know, take your 5 or 10% return on it a year.
But that's what kills a business. The stalemate of just, you know, riding the hockey stick plateau.
Right.
That's how you kill a business. The second you take your foot off the accelerator, that's when your business starts dying
going backwards. I think every business owner at some point takes their foot off the accelerator, because you can't be 100, regardless of what people show on social media, of all these business advisors that are teaching hustle and whatnot and go 100%, and I wake up every day 5 a.m. and
oh, that's all bullshit.
Yeah,
but
come to my class and let me teach you. It doesn't make sense.
That's how they made their money. You bought their class.
Right. Yeah. Any business owner that is selling their idea is selling you bullshit.
Yeah.
Nobody sells their ideas and their process for money. Because that's their edge. That's their competitive edge.
This has been a recurring theme always, right? It was back in the day, it was about flipping houses. You know, how I made my first million flipping houses. Well, you made it because they just sold you a $99 course, right? So I agree with that. It frustrates me when I see those social media posts with those high energy individuals, because the reality is running a business sucks.
Yeah, it's not tough. It's not fun. It's constant stress. It's constant worry. It's constant dealing with politics, compliance, staffing, managers, right? You're always dealing with some kind of problem, putting out some kind of fire.
Everyone is your boss, right? I get frustrated when I hear someone who says, I want to start a business because I want to be my own boss. Well, the reality is once you have that first employee, that first customer, that first anything, you work for them.
Right.
There's no your own boss. And if you think that the luxury is you could take a month off on vacation, sure.
Right.
But unless you built a good business and a good brand and have great people with metrics and goals, it's going to go backwards.
Yep.
So you're double paying for your own vacation.
Yeah.
Right. But I know I said owning a business sucks, but it sucks in the emotional and mental toll that it takes on you. There are a lot of perks to owning a business. The freedoms you can buy and the don'ts that you don't have to do anymore later on after you have nurtured the business, grown a business, watered it, fed it.
Sure.
Right? That's when you can reap some of the reward.
Sure.
But until then,
and that's when you can take your foot off the pedal, right? So we got into this because you mentioned about, you know, being on the accelerator always.
Mm-hmm.
You can take your foot off at times, right? And enjoy the fruits of your labor. And it's important to do that. But it's also important to recognize when you gotta step back in and, you know, keep pushing forward.
That's right. Well, it also is important to get the right people on the team, right people in the right seat. That's a traction term, and it's practiced, and I believe in it heavily, right? It's also important to be able to delegate as now a CEO and a business owner.
Right.
Right? And that's the difference between the entrepreneur and the visionary and the business owner and the CEO, is the business owner and CEO has to make those business decisions to help delegate
Right.
And I see this all too often with small business owners. They're afraid to hire. They're afraid to spend some money on that next in line. Because, well, you can see the money. You can't see the effort from the individual. Right. You can't see the trust.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't invest in your business, you're not getting anywhere.
No.
And if you don't, it's the same like investing in yourself, right? Like, you have to constantly invest in your business, in yourself, to move forward. Otherwise, you're moving backwards. Yep.
And that is, you know, there are lots of business owners that are listening to this show or any other show like this where they're scratching their head saying, well, why isn't my business taking off? Why isn't my business accelerating? And it's because you're living in that plateau, but you're not doing anything to rise above or step on the accelerator again.
You know, maybe that's the case, or maybe they're just in the wrong business. Right, like, not every business has to be successful. This is another, like, misconception in today's world is like, oh, I'm going to grow up and I'm going to open up a business and I'm going to be an instant success. Not every idea, not every business has success.
That's Gen X of you, by the way.
Okay.
Because I believe the younger generations think that, yeah, I started a business, why am I not successful? Or why am I not a crazy famous YouTuber?
Right.
Is what they're saying today.
Right.
Right. So I do agree with you that you have to be willing to put in the work. And, you know, a while back I said that, you know, screw the business plan. Unless you're taking on investors, just write a loosely defined business plan, because you have to be willing to pivot if you want your business to be successful.
Well, you know, like I just said, it doesn't even matter if you do all of that. There's still no guarantee.
Yep.
Right. So it's like, you know, what's driving today's world is people that are solving problems or really good marketing.
Good marketing sometimes wins.
Right.
Yep.
So if you're not solving problem or you're like a marketing guru, you're probably not going to succeed unless you have like a really niche business.
That's right. So what problems are you solving?
Well, I guess you can say I'm in the recycling industry, so I'm solving the issue of recycling materials that have been mined and putting them back into the hands of car manufacturers to create more catalysts so they don't have to mine for those metals again. So that's my problem that I'm solving for the world on a small scale, right? And regardless of how unglamorous that industry is, it's an essential industry for our planet and for, you know, the car industry.
That's right. So on behalf of the world, I do thank you for doing your part. It does make sense. It makes complete sense, though, right? I wish cars would stop getting stolen for it. So how, speaking of that, because it is a hot topic, and, you know, let's talk about that. How do you prevent stolen product from being delivered to you?
You know, there's a lot of ways that people can prevent that. The way we do it is we have attorneys that put in these protocols for us where we do what we call KYC, mm-hmm. Know Your Customer.
Okay.
So we don't buy from the public. We only buy from people that are in our industry, right? So that eliminates a big majority of stolen material, just not buying from the public. Like, people can't just show up and sell to our door.
Okay.
You have to be a registered business. You have to be in our industry to sell to us.
Okay.
After that.
So you're a known known. You have to go through lots of checks, background checks.
Lots of checks.
Okay.
So after that, they give us their tax ID, business licenses, IDs. We run background checks through something called World Check.
Okay.
And if anything comes back, it checks them for the whole world. If they did anything illegal, and if it's anything of question, we say no.
So just right there, when you said we have to have their tax ID, I'm going to surmise that whittles down a lot of the street theft.
Right? Yeah.
Because the guy who's stealing a catalytic converter is probably not going to have a tax ID or
Correct.
Be willing to give you his driver's license.
Correct, but that's my protocol,
okay.
Right? That doesn't mean that the guy, you know, 50 miles away from me is following the same protocols.
Of course. So we talked, there's always bad actors right. in every industry, no matter what it is. Now, unfortunately, the bad actors get the biggest reputation.
Right.
Right. So that's what your industry is known for, is dealing with pilfering, theft.
Right. Well, it is recently, right? Yep. It wasn't the case 5 years ago. It's a recent phenomenon, and it's also dying out because the price of precious metals are tanking, and you know the law enforcement is cracking down on companies that are not following the right protocols. So I would say catalyst theft is probably down 70-80% nationwide. So
I'm going to ask you a tough question. Do you think the industry that you helped create created the crime wave for the theft of catalytic converters?
No. I think the media that talks about it constantly and talks about the values and how easy it is to steal it creates more theft.
So I agree with you. If you suppress the name, you hide that. You don't glorify them or even vilify them. You essentially make their story pointless and irrelevant,
right.
Hopefully curb it. But the challenge that we have, because we still like to hunt witches, right? The media won't let that happen.
Right.
The media sells on fear, chaos, right? It keeps you glued to the TV. It
right.
gets the amygdala running and essentially hooked like a drug. And the media can't live that down. And we could draw that correlation to everything that the media does.
Right.
And unless we shut off media, which we will not be doing,
there's no way to escape.
There's no way to escape this. Yeah.
You know, when we were kids, we would turn on the news once a day, and we'd get our 20, 30 minutes of news with our parents, and we'd move about our lives.
I'm shocked you even sat through it. I hated watching.
Well, I mean, it was in the background.
Oh,
right?
Okay. Yeah.
Today, you're getting news every second.
Everywhere you turn.
Everywhere you go, you're getting news. And that's why there's so much depression, anxiety,
yeah.
right? Because you're constantly being fed negative information,
yeah.
right? So there's no more positivity coming out of media, but that's a separate.
Well, we could change that, right? There are positive programs. I mean, the goal of this program is to lead with inspiration, motivation, business tales, right? To find some path to a less depressive environment. But you know, the honest approach or the honest reality is, I started this because I was on a path of depression after watching
right.
all of this one-sided news.
Right.
Right.
I mean, you also are. All of us are coming out of a part in life that we never thought would happen, right, with this pandemic, regardless of it being a mild pandemic, right, or an overblown pandemic, let's say, right? A lot of people still died,
yeah.
and it was still a pandemic, right? No matter to what degree it was, we still lived through the shutdowns and, you know, not knowing what the future holds. Because that's what the reality was in the beginning, there's a lot of anxiety coming out of it.
We lived together in solidarity through the biggest fear mongering there has been ever in our century and our lives for sure. And it taught us some valuable lessons, but it also drove a nail straight through the heart of this country. All right, so now for the most pivotal question of the hour, do you feel like you're successful?
Look, I think, you know, someone asked me that a week ago. I was at a watch event and someone said, you know, you're successful. Do you feel successful? I said, everyone has their gauge of success. I don't feel successful yet.
You don't feel successful yet?
I do not.
Okay, so let me ask, would someone from the outside or listening in consider you a successful person?
Yeah, I'm sure based on society standards, yes.
Okay. And what is your definition of success?
I don't know what it is.
You don't know
what
your definition
is? And that's what keeps pushing me forward, because I haven't found that point where I feel that I've peaked.
Okay. So are you one of those people where if it's your dying deathbed, you're going to wonder if you were ever happy or if you had your purpose fulfilled?
Probably.
Okay.
Purpose is a very loose term. Because, you know, all of this, all the existence that we have and that we live in eventually will be gone anyway. So it doesn't really, that purpose doesn't really matter, I guess. It's more about what you do in the moment and who you are in the moment.
Okay.
And I guess that's kind of where I'm at in life is, you know, I'm realizing that it doesn't necessarily matter what's going to be of you in 100 or 200 years, because you won't be around. And most likely 99% of what of humanity today, there won't be any remnants of us in a couple of hundred years anyway.
I hate to say it, I'm fairly certain that host of podcasts will not be in the history books.
Right.
And I don't think catalytic converter recycling man will be there either. But
right.
We do live at least one generation, possibly two, in the memories of our family and our children.
Right.
Right. So I would say there is purpose there.
I mean, the purpose is
can define purpose in
sure.
that sense, right?
Yeah.
So when do you think you're going to arrive upon your purpose?
Maybe I will, maybe I won't.
Does that bother you?
Sometimes it does. Sometimes it doesn't. It's one of those things where, you know, you kind of have to accept as you get older. You know, when you're in your 20s and 30s, life is very different mentally.
Yes.
And then when you turn 40, you realize that you are midlife and time is not on your side anymore.
Yeah, you don't have a lot.
Right. And now you have to make smarter choices of how you spend your time.
So there are a whole bunch of people listening to this right now that are in the same exact thought process. They're in the same boat
yep.
with this conversation, and they're wondering what the hell, you know, midlife crisis. The struggle is real. Right? And it's not about just going out and buying your Corvette, right, or your fancy car to get you out of the funk. It is the reality that, yeah, half is gone. If you're lucky,
half is up. Right.
Right. And that's a big kick in the butt.
People call it a midlife crisis because it's easier to call it that, right? But I don't think it's a midlife crisis. I think it's reflection on your life and
midlife
your future.
Reflection. Okay.
Right.
So
it's not a negative thing.
Well, it's used in a negative connotation as an slight to men. And it is, you know, qualified with the acquisition of a brand new shiny red Corvette.
Look,
sorry to stereotype, I love Corvettes.
That's fine, but you know, you also have to consider the fact that most people prior to these crazy years couldn't afford shiny red cars, sports cars,
right.
in their 20s and 30s. Most of the time, you could only start affording these things in your 40s and 50s. Yeah. So the association with midlife crisis and that, I feel like is kind of silly, but you know, that is the association with that.
There's nothing wrong with it. We can justify it. Obviously, like you just said, in your 20s and 30s, you couldn't afford that dream car, and then later on in life, you were able to afford it. So absolutely, go out and buy the dream car if you
yeah.
absolutely want to. I'm just saying that it is actually really healthy when you get to that midlife point, because if you harness the fact that you are now reflecting on what your life has been, where it's going, the purpose of it,
right.
you could potentially see a pivot to becoming a better person. And I think, at least for myself, I have seen that.
Yeah, so it's midlife reflection for
midlife
you.
Midlife reflection. Let's
right.
let's trademark that
yeah.
term. This is trademarked by Jeremy and Darren on the I Took a Hike podcast. Technically, you signed the waiver, so it's now mine. But no, it's the trademark reflection, right? Midlife crisis is midlife reflection.
Right.
It's absolutely true.
For me, purpose, getting back to purpose, is a very loose term. And I don't know, for some people, purpose is their kids, their family, and, you know, their business. That might not be my purpose. I don't know my purpose.
I do believe you are successful.
Thank you.
I believe this conversation alone inspires me. It motivates me. You obviously have a fantastic entrepreneurial mind, an entrepreneurial spirit. You've been a great business owner. You do have these self-doubt, self-reflection moments, but I think that's what keeps you grounded.
Sure.
And probably why you don't rest.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I do give breaks, but yeah. I do keep pushing forward, and I think that's important.
That's an important marker in every successful business-minded individual.
Yeah.
And
I think that the most important thing for your listeners is for them to understand that depending on what point in life they are, they should take the risk accordingly. If you're 20, go all in.
That's right.
If you're 30, be a little smarter. If you're 40, think a little bit more about what you're doing, because time is not on your side.
Well, Jeremy Roizen, I want to thank you for joining me along this experience. I enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you for having me.
And I absolutely see a successful person, whether or not you believe that.
Listen, I won't say I'm unsuccessful. I'm just not I haven't reached my peak of success that I deem as successful.
Well, I will follow up with you because I want to know when you're there.
Yeah, maybe you'll just take the journey with me. Maybe we'll come up with a concept.
That would be really cool. And in a way, now I'm hoping you never find it, because if I'm still searching for that journey along with you, that means we're living a very long life.
Right.
So here's to your health.
Likewise, bud. Thank you.
Next time on I Took a Hike, we go off the beaten path only to find our way back with former COO and CFO of Paramount Global Premium Group, Michael Crotty. This episode is sponsored by DeFi Supplements. Are you feeling stuck in a rut? Do you need more energy for the trail? Stuck behind the screen all day and lacking focus? Well, you need to recalibrate, my friend, and get your energy back for the summit. Calibrate is a premium brain health supplement doctor formulated to help with energy, focus, mood, and longevity. Visit defyyourmind.com and use code HIKE for 20% off, and you will defy your expectations.